Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. This is Judge David Windmiller. It is 24 minutes after the hour, and I'm here to bring you Language on Trial. Now, that's the way it was advertised, but it's for the language on the trial. Now, the reason we're using two prepositional phrases is to certify that language is a noun or a fact, and the trial is a fact. Now, the trials are between the fact and the fiction. Whenever you take prepositional phrases apart, for the, of the, by the, with the first preposition, the prepositions, when you don't use them in prepositional phrases, become adverbs. The articles, when not used in prepositional phrases, become adverbs. If the program was broadcast as the language on trial, it would be an adverb, verb, adverb, verb. In other words, the and on would both be adverbs, making language and trial verbs. When you go into court, you're dealing with people that are in law and at law and by law, making law a verb. Well, law is supposed to be a fact. Sentence structures that are used have to fall within the confines of the Federal Styles Manual. Now, the Federal Styles Manual here in the United States, as well in all 250 countries, had to get together and create a treaty so that what is an adverb, what is a verb, what is an adjective, what is the preposition, what is the article, what is a noun, what is a pronoun, what is future tense, past tense, and what is a conjunction. These parts of speech had to be articulated to tie one word to another word. In joining two words together, you're going to make a determination as to what the definition is as the sentences are put together. Now, when we all went to school, we learned that a sentence is a single idea. A sentence only has one verb in it. Most of the writings that I've seen throughout the history of mankind encompasses sentences that have anywhere from, I'd say, five. Some sentences are 10 verbs. They have, or just about every other word is either an adverb or an adjective or a pronoun. But the one thing that they do is they avoid using prepositional phrases. Now, prepositional phrases used uniquely to describe planet Earth or describe time, to describe the name of an ocean or international, anytime something falls on planet Earth, that it is in a unique position where no political organization controls that specific identity of that landmass or that ocean, they use a prepositional phrase to certify what the definition of that is. Now, when we have a specific, like here, I live in the state of Wisconsin. State is a pronoun, of is an adverb, modifies the verb Wisconsin. Now, where do you put a verb Wisconsin? You put a verb Wisconsin in the verb America. That's why on your money it says the United States of America. And the reason that we're using, they use this terminology to take and modify an adverb, to modify the fact with a verb, modify the fact into the verb with an adverb, falls under the rules of ailing, A-I-L-I-N-G. Now, if something is ailing, it means it's corrupt from the beginning. It means that force was used to acquire the property. Collusion was used to acquire property, or it was stolen property, where somebody didn't know that the continuance of evidence of the what we call lodio, L-O-D-I-O, the lodio or original jurisdiction of ownership is followed. Now, if people have questions as I'm talking here, you can call in from the States. The phone number is 877-876-5227. And that's toll free. Or 888-810-8322 from Canada only. There is a condition of language. Now, language deals with signs. And what you're doing is you're taking the alphabet and you're corrupting what the sign of it is by putting it into words that do not mean the definitions that they were originally intended to be. Because we can pick up a dictionary, we can look up what is a word, for instance, like pen. It says it's an object used for writing. However, if we say the pen, look in a dictionary, you want to find the verb pen, you can't, you won't find it, if it, especially if it was used in a terminology that means it's the object for writing. Now, if you say to pen a letter, then the pen, in this condition, the dictionary says, was used as a verb because that means you're going to write a letter. However, writing is a condition of state. It's not a verb. Thinking is a verb. Writing becomes the condition of that verb. So as a judge, we have to look at the order of operations as to how the words are formed and what is the volition that was initiated to establish the value of each one of those words. Now, the value of those words are determined by the word before it and the word after it. So if you've got two words, you're going to have a condition of 81,000 variables because all words in the English language have 900 definitions because you've got 68 prepositions and 38 articles. You multiply the two of them, divide by two, and that's how many variables you're going to wind up with. Because you have a series of variables, people make presumptions as to what the definition of that word is and how it was presented on the contract. And when you see lawsuits written, or you see constitutions written, you see trusts written, newspapers, magazines, all the writing that's taken place in our existence, when you stop to look at the procedures of words, what the value of those procedures are, then go to the dictionary and look up those procedures of those values. You find out that the definition either does not appear there or the definition that was used in the sentence is incorrect. If you're using an incorrect definition for one word in the sentence, then you lose jurisdiction for that sentence and the document is mute. If you have one mistake wrong in a paragraph, then that paragraph is disqualified and it's mute. If you have a document that has 300 words on a page where a person did not use paragraphs, he just continued to write and put this sentence, write it as one sentence after another, didn't take the time to organize his thought process, didn't organize his paragraphs, and now he's made a mistake with a single word, you lose all the words on that single page because each page is classified as a trust. So now the trust is disqualified or void because of the modification of one single word. When lawsuits are presented to me for correction, I identify the procedures on these lawsuits. By identifying the procedures of every single word, I can make a determination as to what that accurate definition is using a mathematical interface that I've developed. And this mathematical interface guarantees me the value of every word in that sentence. Now, if the words that are used are corrupted. And it isn't words, just one word. If I got 300 words on a page and all 300 are corrupted, not only is the page blank, but it shows that the volition of the individual who created the document had an agenda to say nothing to the court, to uphold the rules of ailing, A-I-L-I-N-G, because he was only licensed, or he's in a term called attorney or lawyer or licensed at bar. So he identified himself to attorney at law, lawyer at law, a pro se litigant, and pro means no, and SA means. So now we have a no speak litigant. If there is a no speak litigant situation, then it's a mute argument. So if an individual says nothing, doesn't matter what he says, if he's identified, if he identifies himself or herself to say, I'm going to say nothing, then they're going to go ahead and they're going to void his, whatever he says in court, so that nothing he says means anything. And of course, you're going to lose your court argument. So why go to court if you're not going to be able to speak? We go through life and we're brainwashed with this adverb verb nonsense. And it's been along so long that the people who created it, the people who teach us, do not want the general public knowing that they've been lied to, that they have been misled. The reason for that is it makes them look foolish. It vacates all their contracts, their treaties, and their trust. It just doesn't do it on an individual basis. It does it on a national basis, on a global basis. Because people don't want the secret removed. They don't want it exposed to the people. So they'll do everything in their power to keep it quiet. I've been teaching how to use the correct procedures and language now publicly for about 15 years. And in the 15 years, I get a lot of negative response, a lot of resistance. And at the same time, I have over 200 million students on a global basis that study this technology and are attempting to become proficient in the correct way to communicate as not to be part of a lie. Because people don't like liars. Again, we have a phone number here, 877-876-5227 and 888-810-8322 for Canada. Feel free to call in for any questions you may have, and I'll try and answer those for you. Now, when we bring an argument before the government, we have to follow a specific set of operating rules and regulations in laying out how a document has to be created for the government. A piece of paper is a vessel. The vessel carries the cargo called words. But these words have to be articulated with complete sentences. They have to have the identity of their titles that are going to be used, the definitions of the titles, the definitions of every single word. They have to follow a format that is systematic. We'll start a document off with a heading as to what jurisdiction we're going to be in, like United States District Court. And then we'll go ahead and tell what city we're going to be in. podcast is coming from here in Milwaukee by way of Los Angeles. So if we're in Los Angeles, it would be United States District Court, Los Angeles Division. The next thing would be a claimant. A claimant would be an individual who is bringing the action, the complaint, to the court. The next thing after that would be, what kind of a case is it? Well, we use the word quo, Q-U-O, warrento, W-A-R-R-E-N-T-O, complaint. A quo warrento complaint means we are challenging the jurisdiction of an individual who wrote an adverb-verb document, and we're saying, show us your words written in the truth or vacate your position. Show us your authorization in the truth or vacate your position. Show us your oath in the truth or vacate your position. And the individuals who are responsible are called vassalis. A vassal, V-A-S-S-A-L, is a servant. A vassal is the servant on a vessel, V-E-S-S-E-L. We also added an ending to vassal called vassali, E-E, and if you look up E-E in the dictionary, it says employee. So a vassali is an employee of the vessel paper on the title complaint. The individuals who we name on there are going to be people who have written a document to extort money or freedom or privileges from another party. Now, the word party means a living, breathing human being. A person is a member of a corporation. The corporation is two or more parties coming together on paper to solve a problem for commerce. So an individual who is involved in a complaint is usually the claimant who is moving, and the vassalis who must have a signed confession. We are required to have a signed confession to name these individuals as vassalis on these complaints. The vassalis create the documents, they sign the documents that they try to extort money, freedoms, or privileges from you. And through that modification of language to create an illusion to steal something of value from you is a criminal offense. It comes under the Racketeering Act, Title 18, Section 1961. Now, if an individual wishes to take something from you and reduce you beyond the point of recovery, that's going to cause you a great deal of damage. So what we will do is we'll take their lawsuits or their paperwork that they created. Sometimes they titled it complaint. Sometimes they titled it indictment. Or they don't title it at all. They just presume that you're going to assume that they're going to create some form of document because the document is coming from a court system. You believe that they have authorization. The fact is they don't have authorization until you sign five different contract forms to give them authorization to prosecute you or to act in some official capacity. There's five different documents, and all the courthouses have got to have these documents laid out there. Now, this vessel called complaint has to be taken to the vessel in dry dock, which you call courthouse. The vessel in the dry dock is controlled by the port authorities. The port authorities are responsible to deal with foreign vessels coming to your jurisdiction. Now, a foreign courthouse would have a yellow fringe flag, or it would use a maritime flag. a maritime flag has a dimension of 3x4 with a blue square field, and then they put yellow fringe around this. A constitutional flag, which is the flag of the land of America, has a dimension of 1 to 1.9 with a blue field of 3x4 dimension. Now, the shape of flags is very important. Many of you may have seen a movie just recently came out called The Kingdom of Heaven. In one of the scenes here where they show two armies coming together, the one army has thousands of different flags that they're flying. These flags are the advertisement of each one of their territorial jurisdictions that have united to bring their grievances to another, to Jerusalem in this movie, Kingdom of Heaven. Now, a very unique thing takes place is if two individuals have a contract, they have peace. If one breaks the contract, then they have war. Now, in this case, you have two individuals who have different forms of contract. And the different contracts that they have, neither can understand each other. If you ask a soldier, what is your business? He says, I'm in the mind control business. If I can't control your mind, then I must do battle with you. Same thing takes place in a courtroom. You have two parties. You have your claimants and your possibles, defendants and petitioners. And what they're doing here is they have a contract in front of the court, and they're trying to argue this contract. But if a contract is written in adverb verb, it says nothing. And the person who brought the contract in adverb verb that says nothing, and the other party says, I can't understand that, then the judge is supposed to be the arbitrator or the translator. But he's not supposed to practice law from the bench. He's not supposed to define what either side is saying. He's supposed to allow both sides to present evidence and then make determinations. But if the evidence presented is nonsense from one side and the evidence presented from the other side is also nonsense, the judge is in a very serious predicament because both sides came to court with nothing. And now he's expected to make a determination over nothing. So what he'll do is he'll make a determination over a presumption. And when he realizes that both the person who came brought the complaint and the person who is the recipient of that complaint can't read and write, it really doesn't matter what he says, because what he is saying is going to also be written in an adverb verb or fictitious manner. So he's not going to take any liability for making a truthful statement to people that can't read and write. He's going to join with the nothingness. Don't forget, in maritime law, you must only have one jurisdiction. If you have fiction, prosecution, fiction, defending, and fiction making decisions, well, now you have one jurisdiction. It's called fiction. When we write a mathematical in-the-truth lawsuit, the in-the-truth lawsuit has a foundation based under law of the flag that we're advertising our truthful contract. We define our laws, we define our rules, we define our jurisdiction, we define the definitions of every word. And so this vessel follows the correct communications of what the vessel has to do. It has a stamp on its vessel. We have endorsement on the vessel. We've paid for that vessel to be brought before the court. We have served the other side with in-the-truth statement outlining all the rules and regulations, and we give them 45 days to study it, to understand what it means, including the court. If the court comes back and says, well, we can't understand this, then it's the clerk of the court's responsibility to find a judge that understands the parts of speech, understands correct sentence structure, understands how to read and write. There's somewhat of a handicap in America today. None of our English teachers or language teachers teach the students how to diagram sentences. They don't teach them what nouns are or what prepositions are or articles. They don't teach them what an adverb, an adjective, or a pronoun is. So the students are lost. The teacher says, write creatively. Imagine. Use your imagination. Use your illusions. But don't put a fact down on paper. If you put facts down, they downgrade you. If you write elusively, or what they call creative writing now, then they go ahead and they pass you. But the fact is that the judges have to study how to read and write in quantum language. The judges have to know the difference between the correct use of language and the incorrect use of language. And it's their responsibility to stop a trial and say both claimant and defendant do not know how to read and write, and send these men home, or women home, until they can write a correct document to bring to the court. Now, if both sides bring nonsense to the court, the court has their own local rules. And if the individuals who are bringing complaints to the court do not take responsibility for what it is they're there for, the judge will go ahead and tell them what they're there for. The judge will go ahead and assign his local rules and assign his determination as to how the trial is going to be conducted. If you take jurisdiction and write your documents out in quantum language, where you use prepositional phrases to certify the value of each noun, that the order of operations of the nouns and how they come together and how the sentences are properly constructed come together to form the correct paragraphs, and the paragraphs create the correct documents. You give the judge no leeway to modify what it is you have placed on paper, and because they lack the ability to make any determinations, your case should be won on the face of the document, or the face of the complaint, because you have articulated the values by which you are bringing in a complaint to the court. Is there any questions out there? All right, I'll move on then. When you go to court and you do file a correct document, and it's called a corporation case. A corporation case is a case that has perpetual existence, and it cannot be dismissed, not by a judge or an attorney. The Supreme Court of the United States can't dismiss a corporation case. If you have a legitimate argument and you write a legitimate claim down, and you use quantum language, and you follow the maritime rules and regulations of how to move vessels from one foreign jurisdiction to another foreign jurisdiction, then you will have the capacity to go to court and win your argument, even if the judges do not put it on trial within the 45-day rules of trust under speedy trial. They lose jurisdiction, and the clerk of the courts is required to sign your complaint and put a court seal on it. The arguments brought before this that you paid to go to trial, and so, but you made that money payable to the clerk of the courts. So the clerk of the courts becomes the banker, the postmaster, and the judge. It is the clerk of the courts that will put the seal on your documents that said your complaint was correct in every aspect, that you had signed confessions for all the wrongs that were done to you, and therefore will assign the judgments that you demanded based on these confessions. And when you have these signed confessions on the table, and then they become bankable. And there are organizations in the United States and in foreign governments will buy these judgments and will monetize them. So it's a good thing to understand the correct way to do these. Now, I am available to do lawsuits for individuals. You can get on my website at dwmlc.com, or you can call me at 414-466-3584 here in Milwaukee, and we can discuss any issues you have with your case. And I am available to be hired to do lawsuits and to assist you and educate you on the correct use of language. I have a video series of 20 hours of video, as well as a 105-page workbook so that you can practice your writing, practice your reading, and be lectured on the mechanics of language so that you can become proficient in articulating before a judge. Now, the quality of my lawsuits are already written so that they can go to the Supreme Court of the United States, whether they be a state case, state action, a federal action, court of appeals action. And if you have to wind up in the end at the United States Supreme Court, these lawsuits are critiqued so that they can go there because the language was used mathematically correctly. If you write a fiction document in your lower courts, in other words, your state court, that argument is mute at a state court of appeals, it's mute at a federal court of appeals, and it's mute at the United States Supreme Court. So you can spend 7 years trying to get there, and it won't ever go anywhere. It'll be vacated because of your inability to read and write. So that brings us to the top of the hour. Again, those that are interested in learning more about this technology and the mathematical interface on language, go to dwmlc.com, or you can call me in Milwaukee here at 414-466-3584 between 9 and 5. I thank you, and you have a good evening.